folks. I'm Jalene Fenner with my co-host,
Tom Majeure.
And Tom, we are doing a four-part series, and it's entitled, Is Your Estate Planned?
You know, Jalene, estate planning is much more than just money. It's about settling all of your estate, and there's a spiritual component. It's being a steward after you've lived this life and how you want your resources and your children to be taken care of.
That's right, because life happens. And we did a Strong Tower Radio Today program that was an overview of this four-part series we're going to be doing.
You know, and there's a lot of myths and a lot of misunderstanding, and people are across the board. We're going to be asking a number of questions to our panel today. Why don't you introduce them?
Well, we have here Joel Nephew, who is the Director of Planned Giving and Trust Services for the Michigan Conference of Seventh-day Adventists.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
And then we also have an attorney, which is a good thing because we want to make sure you're doing those paperwork properly. And his name is Matt Romasco.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And you're an attorney, especially for estate planning. That's what you specialize in?
It is. I've been doing estate planning now for over 20 years.
Okay.
So he's the guy that dots the I's and crosses the T's?
That's right. Yeah. So today's segment one that we're going to be talking about, last will and testaments. So what is a last will and testament, Matt?
Great question. It's actually a written document that communicates a person's final wishes with regard to their possessions and their dependents. The key there is, though, it's written. Michigan doesn't recognize right now an oral will. And my philosophy has always been, if you can say it, you can write it down.
Well, are there states that do have recognize? I mean, I'm a realtor by trade. Everything has to be in writing.
Yes. There's very few that will recognize any type of oral. And we always hear this, you know, grandmother said that I could have this object or that object. But until grandmother actually puts it in writing, it really doesn't mean anything. It's a promise without any legal force and effect.
Well, that's why I guess I'm thinking about oral. It's a he said, she said. I mean, who knows what's actually was the intent?
Absolutely, because somebody may come with the same object and say, grandmother promised the object to me.
Which could have happened. I mean, because one could have been like 30 years ago and she forgot.
Or she changed her mind.
Well, yeah, that's true too.
Well, I got a question also. How many people have wills and testaments? Is there any statistics out there?
Generally, the number is only 4 out of 10 people have an effective estate plan.
So 60% are uncovered.
Yes.
It's like going without an insurance policy, huh?
Exactly.
Now, somebody could have a will, but it could have been written 40 years ago and it's not been addressed.
And that's very true. You should review your estate planning documents every 5 years. But in reality, people go much farther than that.
I've got a question. Is there an apprehension or a fear? Why is that percentage so low?
I think it's multiple reasons. The first reason I think is it's just depressing to think about it.
Okay.
You know, we're actually thinking that we are going to pass away. The other is you're required to make some decisions, and sometimes it's hard decisions. Where's an asset going to go? Who's going to be in charge of it? And some people just don't want to do those specific decisions. And finally, I think it's just a really good way to procrastinate.
Well, and I know for us, I mean, my husband was a contractor, I'm a realtor, so there's real estate involved. And when we're working on something, well, you know, we're thinking about selling it, but right now it's an asset. And so, yes, we had to answer a lot of questions. And now, one thing I wanted to ask you, are there different types of wills?
There are. So Michigan looks at a number of different wills. First, there's what we refer to as our standard will. And this is the document that's written out. There's a statutory will. If you actually go into the Michigan Probate and Estate Planning section in the annotated codes, there's basically a form that you can fill out. But it's very detailed, and it's in the statute itself, so it covers every aspect. And then finally, Michigan has what's called a holographic will. So if you write out the will in your own hand, date it, and sign it, that's a valid will. Now, the issue ends up always being, is that the person's handwriting? It's what's called self-affirming, so we get an example of their handwriting, and if it compares, it's valid.
It does. Is it important to have a date on a will?
Absolutely, because your subsequent will usually always terminate the first will. So you always want to date it.
So two people come up with a will, and how do you determine which one is valid?
Last in time.
There you go.
So we have listeners from all over now that we're streaming online. So every state could have different rules regarding wills.
They do. And one of the interesting rules in Michigan only requires two signatures, two witnesses. Some other states require three. So how we address that is, me personally, I do a lot of my wills, I have three signatures. But if you do a will validly in one state, every state will give you full faith and credit for that will. But once you move, I always recommend that people review their estate plan with a local attorney of that state.
So now when you say you have three people, you know, witness this, it's not maybe a relative? Is it like lots of times attorneys have, you know, somebody on staff who can notarize signatures and witness signatures? I mean, is it good to have your, you know, you making out this will and you have your son, your daughter, you know, somebody there to sign to witness that?
No, you don't want anybody that's interested in the document. Anybody that would receive or anybody that would be named in the document, you do not want them to be signing that document as a witness.
You know, a wills, I think there's an intimidation of people. It's kind of like high and scary, and a lot of people can't relate to that. There's a thing called a simple will. Can you explain it? Does that kind of demystify the will process?
It does. So a lot of times people will come in and say, I want a simple will. And my thought is there's no real simple will because it's always detailed to that person. Everybody's personality is different. Everybody's estate plan is different. And a lot of times the person that comes in and says, I want a simple will, this is the will that ends up being like 10 pages. But, you know, it is one of those documents, like you do real estate. There's certain documents that you're going to come across in your life. Most likely, we'll all deal with a deed in our lifetime if we're dealing with real estate. We should be dealing with a will. That's the simplest document that you will have from your estate planning. So even though it sounds ominous, you know, it sounds something that's very scary, especially when you put the word testament in there, it actually is one of the more simple documents that you're going to have.
So even you may not have a deed or a property or a title to anything, but you still need a will.
You still need a will.
Basic equipment.
So Joel, when should a person consider making a will?
Well, if you don't have one in place, I would say today. Because it is something that you need to do. You need to be 18 years or older. But it does not matter how old you are, how young you are, if you're married or single, if you have kids or don't have kids, you really need to start that process today if you have not already started that or have it in place.
Well, let me just ask a question. So, okay, you don't have a will. How long does it take to draw up a will?
Well, in our department, we usually tell people from start to finish, you got to figure about 4 weeks because there's a process that takes place. Where we come and sit down with them, glean the information, get it to the attorney like Matt or Patty or Vern, the other two attorneys we work with. And then they have a phone consultation and then the documents are drafted and then there's the signing we bring it back for. So it can take longer if the individual doesn't really know what they want to do. And, you know, Matt's talking with them like he's smiling here like it happens that they're not sure, and so they think about it, and then they change their mind, and they change their mind again. Sometimes we even get the documents back to our office ready for signing, and we call for the signing, and the dear lady says, can I make another change? So then it goes back to the attorney, and so that can prolong the process too, but typically 4 weeks is probably pretty
soon. So when we did our Strong Talk Radio today, the overview, I remember Matt saying, you know, somebody calls and like power of attorney, I'm going out of town tomorrow. I need it. Same thing about a will. They're thinking they're maybe going to, you know, be gone away and they're just a little, you know, paranoid about flying on a plane or something. They need to plan this ahead of time to do the will if they're thinking they're going to be going to do something, right?
Absolutely. And as Joel indicated, this is a process. And it's their documents. And from my perspective, the document has to do two things. Number one, it has to say their intent. And number two, they have to understand what it says. And I think that's why some people don't want to do a will, is just because it's intimidating. It's got words that we're not used to sometimes. And so I want them to understand and go through it with them.
Do you have any stories or examples of people waiting to the last minute or anything?
Oh, you know, mission trips are a good example. You know,
they've been planning it for 6 months.
And, yeah. And then, you know, it's 2 days before.
And they're going to a place that's a little dicey.
Yep. And so now they're like, hey, we got to get these documents done. So they call in a frenzy. And, you know, it all depends upon the attorney's workload. We have been able sometimes turn those around in time, but usually it's too late for us to do it before they go.
So you don't meet them at the boarding gate?
No.
Okay.
No.
I got a question. Is when you go to do this process with Joel or with any attorney, do you just kind of show up and just kind of spill your guts? Or should you do a little forethought ahead of time and maybe put things together?
That's a good question, Tom. When we deal with the individuals that we deal with, we send them what we call points to ponder. It's a form that actually it outlines the different things they need to be thinking about, and it has some fill in the blanks so that they can hopefully get some of that done before we come and visit with them. So it gets those juices flowing in their mind of, okay, yeah, oh, I haven't thought about that. So by the time we come, it's been a thinking process that they've had.
And a healthy one, because this is reality. You're either going to deal with it now or later, as the Fram
right.
commercial used to say. Now, what should you consider when you're making this will?
So you want to consider a number of things. The first thing is who's going to be in charge. The old term is executor. We now use the term personal representative. And this has got to be somebody that you trust will actually follow up on your instructions. They're required to do so, but they have to have the ability to make those steps, and they have to have the ability to interact with the beneficiaries of the will, those people that are going to receive the gifts.
So that person needs to know that they're going to be the executor or personal representative?
Absolutely. I always say to individuals, please let them know. The worst meeting that you have in your room, in your office, is explain to somebody for the first time that they're going to be a personal representative of a will or a guardian for somebody's children.
Because the person's passed away and this is what the will says and they didn't even know it.
Yeah. Exactly.
What happens if they say, I'm not going to do this?
Well, when you're preparing your documents, the other thing to consider is contingencies. Now, we already said that you should be reviewing your documents every 5 years. I don't think a lot of people do that. Actually, statistically, very few people do that. So you've got to assume that there's going to be changes in your life and there's going to be changes in the people in your life, and they may not have the capacity or the ability to do it years later when you name the person.
So the capacity, you're saying like that person passed away, or maybe they've got past the age where they want to take care of young people and it's just they don't do that anymore.
Absolutely.
So Joel, does a will avoid probate in Michigan?
No, it does not. The probate process...
Wait, I thought if I have a will, I don't have to go to probate.
I should say it this way, that it may, but...
It may.
But in most instances, no, it does not. The probate process, and Matt can correct me if I'm wrong, but the probate process is there to help oversee that your desires stated in that document are carried forth. So probate's not something that you necessarily want to avoid, but the will does usher that in.
So it's kind of like if you've got your passport and you're trying to get on the airport or plane, or you got your ticket, you get passed through real quickly, it's no big deal. But if something's not in order, you're going to stay there a little while or there'll be some complications.
Complications. It will take longer.
No, and that's a good observation. And, you know, probate is not something to be feared where it once was. They completely redid the Michigan Probate Court in 2000. It's much more streamlined. And, many cases, you can go through informal probate, so you never even see the inside of a courtroom or a judge.
So it's just a checklist, paperwork, desk work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm that was all news to me when you shared that during our Strong Tower Radio Today program. I always feared it myself. It takes a few years to get past that. If you've got a couple and they are have joint, all their assets are held jointly with someone else, do they avoid probate totally?
Well, you can by, you know, with your assets, name, and beneficiaries.
But you got to have all of them lined up.
You got to have everything lined up, because even if you leave one of those assets without a beneficiary named, or like Matt had mentioned in the Today program that about Lady Bird deeds, then you're going to have to go through probate.
Yes. So, okay, let's say that, you know, husband and wife, usually that's what they do. They mm-hmm. leave everything. Okay, so they've left everything to the other spouse, so it doesn't have to go to probate. Because that was in the will that
right.
So they owned assets. But what about, you know, dad had a special rifle that he did promise to one of the sons, but now the mom owns it. Would that have been in the will that way, or what happens, Matt?
So that's a great question. Sometimes we see husbands and wife having mirror image wills, but that doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes the wife's will is different than the husband's. Sometimes if the husband wanted to leave the gun to an individual and he passes away, it goes to the wife. Sometimes that doesn't happen. So you have to work together as a husband and wife team to really make sure that your wishes are granted. The other thing is they'd almost have to be the same. The wife may give everything to the husband. Husband may give everything to the wife. But their contingent beneficiaries may be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I always use the joke, if I were to pass away and my wife predeceases me, maybe everything I have goes to the National Cats Association. If my wife passes away and I'm not around, maybe her assets goes to the National Dog Association. So it's the cat or dog who wins.
So how often is a mirror really an exact mirror?
It's about 50%.
Okay. So it has everything needs to be in the will, in writing.
Yes.
And there is, and let's just maybe interject this real quick about the handwritten list clause, right, article.
Yes.
That's that list that, you know, you and your spouse, you sit down and say, well, that 12-gauge shotgun's going to go to this person, the piano's going to this person, the flying china's going to this person, grandfather's, you know, pocket watch is going to this person. And that designates those items that typically have more of a sentimental value, mm-hmm. so they don't get just sold at an estate sale, and those proceeds go into the estate.
That's right on, Joel. And when they redid the Michigan Trust Code and Probate Code in 2000, they allowed you to incorporate a document in your will. And I do it in virtually every one of my wills, and that is, I may leave a handwritten list. It's dated and signed. And the beautiful thing about that is it makes it more of a living document because I can change that any time during my lifetime by just giving a new list. And it gives you a ability to really control where some of those sentimental assets go. And it saves you money because you're not going into the attorney's office mm-hmm. and doing a new codicil to your will every now and then.
And the word codicil is?
Amendment to your will.
All right, amendment. Now, Joel, if a person has minor children, can they be designated as a guardian or conservator in the will?
Yes. Yes.
They should be, right?
They should be, because you don't want the state to determine who's going to raise your children. And you may think that, well, my brother and sister will do that, and you've talked to them, but if it's not written, the state makes that decision. And they may end up going there eventually, but you want them to go there the day that you pass and not time, you know, between there. So, yeah, we basically, there's the testamentary trust, and that's part of what we, in the package of the will, that we have the guardians and you name the trustee of that trust so you provide for your children.
Let me just talk to that, the importance of putting it in the will. You say the court may actually come up with the same conclusion as the person who passed away and had minor children, But I almost heard between the lines, you're dependent on the court schedule. And will the court get around to you? Are they going to be there? You pass away on a Friday night. Who's going to designate your children? When is that going to take a week?
It can take some time. Sometimes you need to do an emergency hearing. But there's another thing to consider, too. And that is the court may make a decision, but the person that's picked may not have the capacity or have the ability to take that child. And that's where communication is really key in these documents. And that's why I think some people really shy away from doing wills, is because they sometimes don't want to have those hard conversations. Mm-hmm. This is something that's really difficult on a Thanksgiving dinner to have a discussion about, right?
Yeah. Right. But those discussions actually, I think as we talked in the previous program, the introductory, the best time to do it is now and not then.
Right.
Correct.
And it's just going to be easier. It's just a casual, level-headed conversation where if you're in crisis, the emotions are just super elevated and you're in desperation maybe even.
And we know that we don't make the best decisions in desperation.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. So Joel, can a will be changed after it's been signed?
Well, it can be changed by the individual who signed the will. So we call those the codicils that Matt referred to, or revision. And we have individuals that do that. There's a life-changing event takes place. Maybe there's, a new baby, their firstborn. Maybe there's a divorce. Maybe there's a death. Maybe there's an inheritance that they received. And now it's like, boy, this really changes things. So those are all triggers to say, hey, we need to relook at our documents and make sure that they are what they need to be and change things that need to be changed.
So especially like a life-changing event, something happens. And Matt, you had talked about people should review maybe every 5 years, but when something like this happens, it can be changed and it should be looked at.
Absolutely. And, the 5 years is a rule of thumb. And I tell people, really what you should do is anytime there's any type of change in your life, you should review your estate plan. Because, quite frankly, the decisions that you make today are going to change. Your assets are going to be different tomorrow than they are today.
Just to follow up on that, if after one of the spouses is deceased, do you change your will? Is there any reason to change your will? Because the dynamics have changed quite very significantly.
If you get remarried, absolutely. If you have enough contingencies in your will, sometimes you don't have to.
But so if it's well thought out ahead of time, you can avoid a lot of extra work and revisions.
Yeah, and that's why it's important to pull that document out and look at it. Because, that lady, her husband passed away, maybe all they had was that, well, my husband's my PR. They didn't have a secondary. Well, now she doesn't have one. She doesn't have one. So it's a situation that needs to get resolved quicker than later.
Well, then also, okay, so her husband's passed away, and now she gets remarried, and that gentleman has children. Doesn't that affect the will?
Yes.
Could, especially it could. If you don't change it or don't do anything with it and down the road.
It definitely could, and that's one of those life-changing events that you really want to look at these documents closely.
Now, Matt, should a person use a form, or can they use a form that they find on the internet or in a forms book? What is the pluses and minuses? Let me just throw it. Is some will better than no will?
Yes and no.
Sounds like a good lawyer answer.
It's a great attorney answer. So some document is better than no document for the most part. But really what we look at is with these form documents, a lot of times they don't have built in all of the mechanisms that you need. For example, it may say, what do you want your specific assets to be? But it may not have a rest and residue clause, like where's the rest of the stuff go? And it may have only one line for your personal representative, so it doesn't have the contingencies that we're talking about.
There's a saying that I read a long time ago. It's actually in medical records. It's a saying that who knows to attribute to, but the faded ink is more accurate than the best memory. Huh? And so writing is everything.
writing is absolutely everything in this case.
So, Joel, if a person wants to make a will, you know, how do they start the process and who do they need to contact?
Okay. So you need to have an attorney involved in this, and they can go to the local attorney in their hometown and do that. How we help our church members is that they would just contact us, and we facilitate that process. They can call our office at 517-316-1520 and talk with Casey McFarland, and she'll refer that to me, and we'll answer questions you might have and help that process along.
Anybody, though, could call you. They don't have to be a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church to just call you and get have some questions.
Yep. If they have questions, you know, we'll gladly answer what we can. If we don't know the answer, we have great attorneys like Matt that we can tap on the shoulder and say, hey, what about this? And we're here to serve and help any way we can.
Okay. So, folks, if you have any questions about wills, give Joel's office a call. That phone number is 517-316-1520. And they will try to answer your questions. If they don't know, they're going to get you in the right direction. Somebody that can help you with that answer. Well, folks, this has been part one of a part four series, Is Your Estate Planned? And so you will have to listen next time, when we will be talking about trust, which we brought up in this segment one. You have to have a will. And in a will, lots of times there are trusts, or there are always trusts in a will.
Sometimes there are trusts, but not always.
Okay. Okay. So stay tuned next time for Is Your Estate Planned? And we will be talking about trusts.